This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I don't know what episode this is. We're closing in. We're getting close to 800, I think. So that's coming up soon. But when it gets here, it gets here. It's been a good week. All is well. Things are puttering along. So, all is well at work. We've got another big weekend coming up for that missionary training, missionary renewal registration system. Because this weekend is when all the veteran missionaries will be coming in. And so we'll, as opposed to having 140-ish missionary units that were registered a couple of weeks ago, this time it'll be in the 300s. So they're definitely a little higher stress environment, but we made it through the first registration without too many troubles. There was some little minor things that started happening like at 4:30 in the afternoon, but we think those have been taken care of now. George managed to get those all chased down, and I assisted, and we took care of whatever database changes we needed for the few minor things we needed to take care of. And so did some testing today. All seems to be well. We'll see how it goes. So Saturday will be the big day. And I will have my computer with me, obviously, just in case. So that's all good. We have other things on our agenda coming up now that we're getting through the MTMR stuff, and we'll be looking at which of those pieces to do and to launch into, and so all is well. All is well. We're just puttering along. There have been a couple of rocks that have fallen out of the sky, but that's just kind of the way things are. So we'll get that taken care of as best we can and go from there. Anyway, so that's good as far as the writing goes. I was able to upload all the new versions, the production versions of Book 20 last night, so that means I'm a little ahead of schedule, which I need to be, so tonight, I've already ordered the production copies for the people I give free books to every time. Tonight, I'll be kind of finishing that up with doing the post to Facebook and making the updates to my website and all that sort of thing to kind of announce and say, here's what's available, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that shouldn't be that big of a deal. Hopefully it won't take that long. And then I'm actually going to take the next week off. So I would normally get started with reading what I have written so far on Book 21, but I'm working on this Marvin the Martian costume, and I would feel more comfortable if I was just a little farther ahead with that. I think I'm down to 4 weeks now, and so I'm going to dedicate this next week to seeing if I can kind of leapfrog. And if I can get basically the whole headset done this next week, working every evening, working the weekends, potentially even working on July the 4th, which we're off. If I can get that done, then the rest of it's pretty simple. It should go together pretty quickly. So that'll be good. The Marvin the Martian thing is coming along, because I gave myself the task of making the eyes move, or appear to move, I should say. And it's turned out to cost more in supplies than I would expect, but that's okay too. You know, I enjoy this. It's like an artsy crafty thingy, and so, you know, it's not wasted. It's first of all good for my brain to think in different ways, and second of all, it's good for my brain to get in the flow of hearing from Jesus, helping me solve all the design issues. And third of all, it's good for my brain to see the smiles. So that's always when someone says, do they pay you to do this? You know, because I sometimes get grumpy old men that are trying to figure out basically why they are more righteous than everybody else in the world. And the fact that somebody is doing costumes and coming to Walmart and making people smile, there has to be some self-serving motive, which there is, but it's not money. And that's why my response to them is, listen, I get paid in smiles. And so it's fun. Tomorrow is World UFO Day, which that's always fun. And it's a fun costume, makes people smile. It's one of those ones where you inflate it and it looks like I've got this 7-foot alien behind me that is holding me up under the armpits and carrying me around. And I have a face mask that says help on it. And then I have a Roswell hat that I wear. And so it's fun, you know. I'll have to go up back and brush up on the bit and see what jokes, if I had anything for it. But people always enjoy this one, so it's fun. Then 4th of July will come next. And then National Nude Day, I think, is next. Or no, the next is either Paper Bag Day or National Hemp Month. And then it's National Nude Day. And then we're really close to Marvin the Martian. So there you go. There you go. So it's all good, though. Jesus is kind. And if for some reason I can't get Marvin the Martian done, there's always going back to National Rat Catcher Day, which is fun as well. So this week I had come across, I think I mentioned it last week, a podcast by Heather Hagen and Brent Weinstein. And I was listening to them, and Brent Weinstein started discussing a pretty interesting topic. And I think I mentioned that last week. I thought, oh, maybe I'll switch topics. But then I thought, no, you need time to kind of think about this and chat about it a little bit. You know, then when you get back to it, you'll have to actually have some notes, and it'll be good. So I did print out a summarization of their particular podcast. This summarization stuff is just fabulous. So anything that has a transcript, even if it's auto-generated, you can take the YouTube video and go to summarize.tech, T-E-C-H, and I'm sure there's others. This was the first one I found, and it does a decent job, and we're done. You can go to summarize.tech, and you can put in the shortcut for the YouTube video, and it will go out to YouTube, and it will grab the transcript, and then after it downloads the transcript, it will summarize it. Now, I found out this week that there is a speed difference. Rightly so, if someone has already summarized the YouTube video that you're trying to summarize, it's instantaneous. But if you put a video in that hasn't been summarized yet, it first has to download the transcript, and then once it gets the download transcript, then it has to do its thing. But still, all told, it 15 seconds, something like that, which is a whole lot faster than I could ever do myself. So the interesting part of this particular podcast to me kicked in at around the 15-minute mark. And this particular podcast, if you want to listen to the whole thing, was called Monsters, Spotted. And this was the Dark Horse podcast. So you can look it up on YouTube. Monsters, Spotted, the 229th Evolutionary Lens with Brent Weinstein and Heather Hagen. So at about the 15-minute part, Brett Weinstein started discussing the importance of being clear in the definition of certain terms. And And the more he talked about this, the more I thought, yep. And I think I've talked to like one or two people about this, but it got to be a very important discussion. And specifically, he was talking about terms like sympathy and empathy, because those get kicked around a lot in our present day and age when people are trying to find reasons to criticize others and classify them as monsters. And empathy and sympathy are, you know, tools that are used to bludgeon people into agreeing to things that are just flat out bad for society. So what Brent Weinstein was saying was that he was arguing for the more classic definition of empathy instead of just feeling like I think I know how people feel, to something more akin to a technique for predicting others' feelings and actions based on their predicament. So that's really important. There is an experiment you can do to find out if you have empathy, and that is, can you predict what another person's, I'm getting my mail, what another person's reactions might be, how they might feel, what their actions might be, based on the experience of what they are experiencing. So based solely on your understanding of the experiences they're having. And then he went on further to define sympathy as wanting that person to have a good outcome in whatever situation you are predicting that they are in. And I think that's a pretty good definition, really, because things get slopped around, and in the process of things getting slopped around, we actually end up with this amorphous definition of empathy and sympathy that can be twisted towards anyone's desire. And in the process of that twisting, then it becomes a tool. And it becomes a tool to bludgeon others into agreeing to whatever we're trying to get them to agree with, when in fact, what is being touted as what you need to experience isn't empathy or sympathy at all. So one of the interesting things about being a writer and writing novels is that your skill level as a writer is judged directly on your ability to craft a, quote, believable, unquote, character. And so people have a sense as they're reading your work as to whether or not the characters that you have introduced and described would behave in the ways that you are having them behave. And so people are using their empathy to read about the predicaments that these characters are in, and based on how these characters have been described, they then develop the sense of how these characters would behave in that situation. And then if they turn out liking the characters, then of course they become sympathetic towards those characters. So what's important in this is to develop a model that is an accurate model of behavior for various groups. And as Brent and Heather were discussing this, they added in the concept of theory of mind, which Brent believes was a more comprehensive than just sympathy and empathy. And he was arguing that theory of mind, which refers to the ability to understand another organism's perspective, is more comprehensive and focuses more on motivation and emotion. He also emphasized the importance of distinguishing between terms of art, i.e. things that are more scientific in nature, and terms in common parlance as language evolves and words can lose precision. And both of them discussed, you know, the difficulties and the challenges of defining and using precise concepts to discuss complex items. So that was interesting. They did go on to talk about how you can enhance your empathy by engaging with narratives they haven't personally experienced, such as reading novels through the perspective of characters of the opposite sex. However, if the writer is not capable of doing that, that's a problem. So if you want to know how women think, it's probably best if you read novels by true biological women. Conversely, also how men think. And they explain that empathy is a crucial tool for understanding and predicting the behaviors of others, whether they are friends, enemies, or teammates. So what's interesting is they also did go on to discuss how encountering individuals with different emotional tendencies like sociopath can lead to misunderstanding if one doesn't adjust their expectations based on the other person's unique mindset. And they emphasize the need to consider different perspectives when interpreting behavior. And how specifically someone with a lack of moral constraints, that empathizing with that person is crucially important in the classic sense of the word. Because as you empathize with someone who's a psychopath or a sociopath, you're not validating what they are. What you're doing is you understand how they will behave. And based on how they would behave, you tailor your experience with them as to what you will allow and will not allow. Because when it comes to sociopaths and psychopaths, you know, if you allow them to run rampant over you, they will. And so being empathetic towards a sociopath and a psychopath will get you into a lot of trouble if your empathy is less than trying to truly understand how that person thinks and reacts to stimuli. You end up just being exploited if all you're doing is going, oh, you poor dear. You know, how can mommy help you feel better? Because that's not empathy. It's something else, which I'll talk about in just a second. So it was really interesting. They did mention as well that when you're looking at corporations, that while we talk about the personhood of corporations, in fact, there is no personhood in corporations, and that the corporation, for the most part, only exists to survive. Corporations that are for-profit corporations may claim that it's more than just surviving, that they have a true purpose. But even non-profit corporations will change their behavior to make themselves more survivable. And certainly if you have a for-profit corporation like Google, that in the early days was proclaiming all the time that one of their mission statements was don't be evil. Well, that hung around until the money started pouring in through a fire hose. And as soon as they started that ad campaigning stuff, AdWords, all those don't be evil rules just went out the window, and they were doing everything they could to squeeze the last penny out of their evil people who advertised on their platform. So it's quite easy to understand how corporations, even though we like to ascribe to them personhood, don't really have any ethics because they exist for survival. So if you've got a corporation with bad ethics, and you've got a corporation with good ethics, and then you've got a corporation with mixed ethics. First thing that's going to happen is the corporation with bad ethics that's willing to do anything to make a buck, they, of course, are going to put the good ethics corporation out of business. And they'll eventually either put the half-and-half ethics corporation out of business, or else the half-and-half will go fully evil to combat against that. So, you know, then you get into things where you've got immoral behavior with corporations, but then they mask it with doing things like ESG and celebrating Pride Month and doing all this kind of stuff because they want to make themselves look like that they're not just a corporation that's out for profit. But, you know, they will hire consulting firms to figure out how to screw over their employees and et cetera, et cetera. So all of that discussion, that was, it was very interesting. It was very, very interesting. And I got to thinking about all of that afterwards, and I went, oh, very good, because I'm sure Brent Weinstein and Heather Hain had thought of this, and it probably was in their talk somewhere, and I just missed it, but I'm not sure they said this explicitly, and that is that we can use this definition to determine how genuine those people are who are claiming that they are more empathetic than everybody else and that they're more righteous because of that. And if you wanted to be righteous, you really needed to embrace what they were saying as well, because this whole thing with transgenderism or, you know, the Palestinians or any of that, all of it, the claim is, you know, do you not have any empathy for this? Or do you not have any empathy for that? Or can't you just be kind to these people? And can't you just, because they're claiming that they know how those people feel, whoever those people are. Now, what's really funny is the man on the street interviews where they'll do things like, do you think we should have voter ID? And the white people will say, oh, no, that's such an imposition. It's so hard for black people to get voter ID because, you know, they don't even might not even have a Kinko's that's near them. And, you know, it's so hard for them to go down to the post office and, you know, get an identification, or it's hard for them to apply for a driver's license. And then the man on the streets goes down into Harlem, or he goes down into Brooklyn or wherever. And he starts talking to African-American people and saying, do you have some sort of an ID, governmental issue ID? And they're looking at him like, well, of course we have governmental issue IDs. I've got a driver's license. I've got a Social Security card. I have this. I have that. And he starts playing them the comments of these good white liberals who think they're being so empathetic by providing all of these excuses why black people simply can't get official governmental issued IDs. And the reactions of the typical African American people down in the Bronx, they're just looking at them like, what are they talking about? We don't have a Kinko's. Of course we have a Kinko's. You know, what are they talking about? Because these people who are putting forth what they think should happen because it makes them feel righteous, and they're doing it on behalf of someone else, thinking they understand how that person feels. In fact, their predictions for what those people's lives are like are not accurate. So according to the good definition of empathy, then, what they're experiencing is not empathy. And I would maintain it's actually narcissism. They're just making stuff up because it makes them sound righteous. You know, it's the same type of thing of when biological women say, look, I don't want to change in front of a man. You know, okay, in the first place, anyone who's a transgender female who still has all of their biological machinery intact and who is parading around inside of a female locker with their genitalia hanging out, that person is not empathetic. That person is narcissistic. There's no question about that. So then you have women, many times, defending the actions of this person doing this under the guise of empathy when it has nothing to do with empathy. It is also narcissistic because they're just trying to make themselves feel good because they think they can empathize with the person who's walking around, who is a male in a female locker room. They think they're empathizing with them when in fact they don't realize they're not empathizing with them at all. What they're doing is they're just reflecting that person's narcissism. Because when you look at somebody like a Leah Thomas, if Leah Thomas had any empathy for the women around her, she would realize that parading around in front of those women was going to cause a reaction. And she would find another way to get into her swimsuit. And she wouldn't compete with them anyways, because she would realize the inherent unfairness of them. So the only way you get certain transgender behavior is if people are not empathetic but narcissistic. And it does them no good for us then in our narcissism and not empathy to defend that. And of course, the excuse people give is, well, you know, what, do you just want kids to kill themselves? Okay, well, let's just back up. Because are the kids really going to kill themselves? And if they are killing themselves, is that really going to be benefited by having someone coddle their mental illness? Is that really the best way to solve that? And so we continually in these, you know, far left or right behaviors, it's all self-aggrandizing and it's not empathetic at all. Because if you've got someone who's screaming in your face and demanding that you use their pronouns, the truly empathetic person says, okay, this person has a mental disturbance that is going to be made worse by anyone who keeps comforting them in that and encouraging them in that. So, of course, I'm not doing that because I am sympathetic with them as a human being. I know that they are in difficulties, and their difficulties are not going to be made better by me be narcissistically encouraging their narcissism. So it was an interesting discussion. It was very, very interesting. And it kind of gave me a new perspective on it. And I'm long and I should wrap this up, but this is Phil Ferrand and I have made it home.